Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we're chatting with James Clear. James is the author of Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, Remarkable Results, and he's also an entrepreneur.
James spoke with us from his home office in Columbus, Ohio, about how we can form new habits in a dramatically altered universe.
When life is uncertain, your habits can ground you. When you're not sure what the future holds or what the next day is going to bring, you can return to the fundamentals.
James is a return guest on The Upgrade. He joined us back in May of 2019, around the time when his book Atomic Habits first came out. Hey, Alice.
Hey, Melissa.
So talk to me. What's going on over in your neck of the woods?
You know, things are okay. It's sort of like the adrenaline has worn off and it's just kind of like, this is my life now. I'm home and it's fine. You know, it's like when the weather is bad, I get really depressed because I don't get outside and that's harder. But when the weather is nice, I'm like, okay, at least we can still, unlike other countries, right? We can still walk around kind of purposelessly, which is good. I'm really glad for that. I'm grateful to have a dog to give me an excuse to get out even more. But I'm okay. Like things are, I feel grateful that we're all still healthy and we're okay. How about you? How are things over there?
Yeah, it's a new week and, you know, just like the old week, you know, it definitely feels like the vibe is changing in New York City, right? Like here we are at the so-called epicenter and, you know, I'm sort of dealing with the radically different ways in which my friends are confronting what's going on outside our doors. Some people are, you know, taking precautions, running errands as infrequently as possible. Others are not leaving their homes at all, and trying to figure out and tease what the right thing is to do out from all the information out there. You know, obviously, Lifehacker is the best source for me, and our health editor, Beth Skorecki, has been really helpful in kind of sifting through all the information and making sense of it and telling us sort of like, yes, this is something we should listen to. No, this is something that's just a rumor. So that's been helpful for me. But, you know, I think it says something about the human mind's capacity for adjusting to anything in that I certainly haven't become comfortable with the notion that the world is radically changed forever. You know, that that hasn't sunk in yet, but intellectually I know it. So some cognitive dissonance there.
Right. It's so abstract. Yeah. How do you grasp it? I keep finding myself looking at the news, like almost wanting something to kind of jolt me out of this kind of abstract feeling of like, well, things are just okay. And it's just like, no, it's actually like there's things that are horrible. And I want to kind of like, I want it to be more real to me than it currently feels. I have a lot of friends who are not in New York who've been contacting me a lot to be like, how are you? Are you okay? Like, there's this sort of idea that because we're in this sort of red hot epicenter that it's really dire here. But the reality is, you know, we're all in our apartments just kind of fine, unless we're not fine, but generally fine.
Right. I think that kind of assumption that, oh, well, you know, wherever the epicenter is, they must be really feeling it because we're not necessarily feeling it here in, you know, whatever state. I think what it's important to tell those people is, you know, I can't see it either. You know, I can see people's response and that people aren't going out, but I don't, you know, I'm not seeing the horrible images that you're seeing on the news of the hospitals or anything.
Right.
You know, day to day, I'm living in a quiet Brooklyn neighborhood and it's weird as it is everywhere.
Yeah.
Should we talk to James?
Hi, Hi, James. Good to talk to you.
Hey, James.
Hello. Yeah, nice to talk to you, too. Nice to see you again.
So talk to us about your physical distancing and what that looks like.
So I have a home office, so I've kind of been used to staying at home or working from home. So that hasn't been too much of a change for me. But my wife is working from home now, so that's different. We've got kind of like two people competing for professional spaces and, you know, different good Skype and Zoom backgrounds. But yeah, for the most part, it hasn't been that bad. We try to get outside, go for walks each day. So that's been good.
And how are you applying sort of the principles of Atomic Habits to the new reality?
It's a good question. Like anytime the environment changes in a big way, behavior changes in a big way. And so you cannot have, from a high level, you cannot have a habit outside of a context, right? Like we live our entire lives inside of different environments. And so behaviors and habits get tied to particular context. Like your couch is where you have the habit of watching Netflix at 7 p.m. or the coffee shop across your street is where you have the habit of scrolling Twitter or browsing Instagram or whatever. And so when that environment changes, the behavior often shifts. And there's kind of two pieces to that. Like on the one hand, you can use that as an advantage because now there are things that are available to you or visible to you or obvious to you that were not before. And perhaps some of those spaces don't have that much tied to them usually. Like there's not that much that you usually have tied to your living room at 10 a.m. because you hadn't been there that often. You were in the office instead. So you kind of have this blank slate where maybe you can build a new habit. So that's nice. But then there's the flip side of the coin, which is actions are more obvious and easy and available and visible to you that weren't before. So if you're working from the kitchen table, the pantry is right around the corner and now you can snack a lot. Different examples like that. So I think what I'm trying to do is in whatever ways things are a little bit new. So for example, I can't get out. And so the timing when I would usually leave, like for example, we usually or used to go to the gym around 5 p.m. So now I'm using that as a cue to end the day still, but I'm inserting a new habit for it. So we go on a walk at that time each day. So I think there are a couple different things happening there. It's like, what is obvious and available and visible to me and easy that wasn't before? And can I use that to link a new habit to it? And then also, what was I doing in my old routine that I can now maybe substitute something new at that same time so I don't get thrown off course too much and just, you know, find myself like sitting around all day?
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about pertaining to not knowing my living room at 10 a.m., I don't have an office in my apartment. I have a living room that has a desk in it. And I work at that desk. Typically, when I go into the office, I work there in the mornings, generally before it's light. And I don't have a problem with the fact that my back is facing the window. And after days and days of facing the wall, I realized this is ridiculous. You know, there's a beautiful view of Brooklyn behind me. I should change this. And I was thinking about how that would change what my living room feels like. And then I realized it's going to change what I think my living room looks like, which is the picture of the living room when I get home from work, go to the couch and watch TV. It might not look like that place if I completely rearrange the furniture, but it's also going to make my workspace into a place that I'm more excited to go to and that's more pleasant and where I'm getting more light. And so kind of changing the way that I think about what the space is used for has been really helpful for me.
Yeah. So some of the principles that I talk about in Atomic Habits, they're roughly speaking, there are like four things or so that you kind of want working in your favor if you want a good habit to form. So the first two I've already talked about. So the first one is you want to make it obvious. You want your good habits to be obvious, available, visible, easy to see. And that was some of the environment design stuff that I was mentioning a minute ago. The second thing, though, is you want to make it attractive. And that's a lot of what you're mentioning here, right? Like, how can I feel like this space is attractive for the behavior or for the process that I need to perform? And so being able to look out of the window rather than looking at the wall, or increasing the natural light in the space so that I feel more awake and it's welcoming rather than feeling like it's dark and closed off. Whatever that is for you, you want it to feel motivating as much as possible to do that action. And then the other two are you want to make it easy. You want to make it as simple as possible. So one of the things that I'm doing is trying to make it easy to read more. And so, you know, you don't have to spend time on commutes or driving places or whatever. So you've got kind of this extra time. I want to use it productively. So part of that is I have a stack of five or six books just sitting next to me on the desk here. So that's in my office. I have a couple sitting next to the bed, like on the end table there, and then a few strewn throughout the living room. So physical, making it more physically obvious and easy to do. But I also moved Audible to the home screen of my phone. So it was the first thing I would see when I open it up. So it's just a reminder, oh, don't get distracted looking at social media, listen to something productive. And you can do the same thing with, you know, if you, for me, I'm usually in the browser when I'm on my desktop. And I usually have 10 to 20 tabs open, and like three or so are about work, Gmail, Asana, things like that. But usually the other 10 are things that I'm either currently reading or want to read. And kind of the point there is that when I feel the urge to get distracted, I just click on one of those tabs and read that and do something a little bit more productive instead. So those principles of making it obvious and making it attractive and making it easy. And then the fourth one is to make it satisfying, so you have some kind of reward to it. You don't need all four to happen for a good habit to stick, but the more of those that you have working in your favor, the greater the odds that you're going to be able to follow through.
Something that I was just thinking about is we're talking about habits, right? But we're also talking about habits in the middle of a pandemic. And it almost feels like when you're talking about these habits, it's almost like a form of self-care, like making reading easier for yourself is something that's important to do right now when our minds might be really full of all of the horrors of what's going on, the really stressful aspects of what's happening. I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, like when life is uncertain, your habits can ground you. When you're not sure what the future holds or what the next day is going to bring, you can return to the fundamentals. And I do think that in a lot of ways, when we feel like the world is uncontrollable, we need to return to what we can control. And you can control your habits. You can return to a morning workout routine or a quick meditation or deep breathing session or to read at the same time each day or whatever it is that you're interested in. It gives you a sense of control over your life again, a sense of ownership that maybe you felt like was taken away a little bit by all of this, whether it was things that you were asked to do to help the community out, social distancing, sheltering in place, etc., or things that you just kind of feel uncertain and fearful of because we're not sure how far it's going to spread. And so yeah, in a lot of ways, I think habits can do more than just provide the result of what the habit itself is working toward, right? They can provide a little bit of psychological well-being or self-care. And this is a topic I tangentially or kind of adjacent to something that I talk about in the book, this idea of identity-based habits, that your habits are, they're a signal of the type of person that you are. They cast a vote for the type of person you want to become. And so when you're stuck in situations like this or feel like things are uncontrollable, I don't know what tomorrow can bring, but I can cast a vote for I'm the type of person who doesn't miss workouts, or I'm a meditator, or I'm a reader. And that's an empowering thing that is nice to have when you feel like you're in a powerless situation. So I do agree that habits can serve kind of an important self-care role there as well.
Video games. Heard of them? I'm Maddie Myers.
I'm Jason Schreier.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton, and we're the hosts of Kotaku Split Screen.
We get together each week to talk about the biggest news from the world of video games.
We also discuss the games we're playing, from the most elaborate blockbusters to the most interesting indie games.
We're joined by a variety of guests from the world of video games, from legendary developers to famous streamers to TV hosts to one time we had on an NFL kicker.
Find us at Kotaku.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the habits that I'm trying to develop, and I think everyone's trying to develop, is not touching my face, especially not touching my face when I'm out in public and haven't Purelled my hands. Have you thought about this at all? Have you thought about, you know, how we can build this habit?
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of talking to readers about wanting to stop biting their nails, in the sense that people who bite their nails often aren't thinking about doing it. It's just kind of mindless and automatic, and they don't even realize it until it's already done. And certainly most of us, whether it's, you know, swiping your hair away or touching your eyebrows or touching your face or whatever, like you don't even know you did it till it's over. And what I've found is that in those cases, there are kind of two good places to intervene. It's not really that productive to say, oh, just don't do it, or you need to stop wanting to do that, or whatever. Like it's just, it's kind of just a natural response. So one of the places that you can intervene is to increase the difficulty of the task. So, you know, you could imagine, just to give like an extreme example, if you wore like one of those like dog collars or neck braces or something that, you know, dogs have on, the little cone after a surgery, like it'd be very hard to touch your face. And the fact that you made it difficult would decrease the odds that you do it. I actually saw kind of a hilarious video on social media of a guy walking down the street with like a giant hula hoop around him. It was like three times larger than a normal hula hoop, just to keep everybody away, to maximize the social distancing. It was like a 6-foot ring around him. But the point is, if you're using technology or things like that to make it hard, you're going to be less likely to do it. The other place to intervene is to make it obvious, or to make it, as we mentioned, like leaving things in the environment, et cetera. If you make it more obvious that you're touching your face, then maybe you're going to remember in the moment to not do it. So simply wearing some of those like surgical gloves is a good example, because if you have the gloves on, one, you realize, oh, I'm doing this for a reason. Maybe I'll keep my hands away. But two, even if you mindlessly touch your face, you realize it because the sensation is different than your hand. And so wearing gloves may be one potential opportunity to do that. It's very hard to change habits like this that are so automatic and mindless and deeply ingrained that you don't realize it until after it happens. There's a story that I mentioned in the book about this. It's called pointing and calling is the strategy. And if you go to Japan, you'll notice that train conductors do this when the Shinkansen, the bullet train, when it pulls into the station, you'll see the conductor do things like they'll point at the signal and say, signal is green, or they'll point at the speedometer and they'll say, speed is 30 kilometers an hour. And the purpose of doing that is that whenever you do something consistently, repeatedly, like a conductor pulling into the same station every day, it becomes like automatic. It becomes a habit. It goes on autopilot. And when you can do it good enough on autopilot, you stop thinking about how to do it better. You stop noticing your little mistakes. And so by saying it out loud, by pointing and calling, they raise the level of awareness of what they're doing. So it sounds silly, but we're all alone in our apartments and homes right now, so you could do it without being judged too much. But you could actually say out loud, "When I just touched my face," or "I touched my face and I don't want to be doing that right now." And the point is to try to raise the level of awareness about the behavior so that maybe you're a little more mindful of it as you go through the day. I do think, though, that the best strategy is probably finding ways to make it difficult. That dog cone idea would actually work, regardless of how ridiculous it sounds or looks. Wearing a mask is another one. You know, like it just, again, it's kind of like having gloves on your hands. It, you know, makes you think a little bit more and you realize, oh, I have this on for a reason. So it's difficult to change behaviors like that, but those are probably the actions that would actually have the best odds of working.
What kind of new habits are you starting up in this current environment? Got any new things?
Yeah. So the daily walks has been new. Previously, I was doing mostly strength training and like going to an actual gym. So that's been a little different. What's been nice about that is I had been thinking, oh, this is a health habit for my body, right? I'm just trying to get out and move around a little bit. But actually, I've realized it's actually been a nice thinking habit to get out and just like be in open air and have a chance to think and consider a little bit more. So that may be something that I stick with once the quarantine is over. So that's been helpful. And then really what I'm trying to do right now, as I mentioned, I already have a home office. So, you know, like most of my workday is looking relatively similar, but I do have this kind of extra time now because we're not driving to restaurants or not going out to eat or whatever. And I'm trying to do things to use that time productively rather than to just like, I don't know, almost act like I'm on vacation where it's like free time, let's just watch Netflix or whatever. And like, that's totally fine occasionally. I just don't want to do that. I don't want that to become the new standard. And so mostly I'm trying to fill that time with reading. And I already told you a little bit about, you know, trying to make the books more obvious in the Audible app and whatnot. So it's mostly been reading and walking have been the two new ones that I've tried to build.
Thank you so much for talking with us. This is really helpful.
Thank you.
It's great to check in with you and just sort of, you know, see how your philosophy kind of translates into a drastic moment.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you. Thanks for thinking of me. And yeah, I hope that was helpful. So thanks for giving me a little bit of time.
And now it's time for Upgrade of the Week, where we talk about that one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives, Melissa, what's your upgrade this week?
So my upgrade this week, I spoke a little with James about an upgrade that I made moving my desk in front of the window, which has helped a lot. Another upgrade, because, you know, I have nothing to do these days but upgrade, is something that I tried yesterday, which is this Instagram Live dance party with the choreographer Ryan Heffington. So he's a choreographer in LA. You know, a lot of people are putting together ad hoc Instagram lives or Facebook lives, trying to get people moving or trying to, you know, bring their art to people. This guy, I had never heard of before this, but a friend of mine said it was the most fun she'd had all week. You just dance with him. That's basically what it is. It's twice a week. It's at 1 p.m. on the East Coast on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And he just teaches you a couple of really rudimentary moves and puts the music on, and he's incredibly fun, and you just sweat. You just move around as much as you want to. It's great for just getting some energy out. It's great to work on your moves. It's great if you have kids who just want to like jump around and do something. He's really funny. You know, like there are certain moves where yesterday we were washing our windows because you had never spent any time in your house. So one of the moves was washing the windows. One of the moves was like taking care of your emails, you know, and like these were all worked into his choreography. It was really fun. So I highly recommend it. Ryan Heffington, Instagram Live. Check it out. There were about 5,000 people dancing with him yesterday.
Awesome.
Alice, what's your upgrade?
My upgrade is an app that we talked about on the Lifehacker Slack channel. And at the same day, my friend Deanna told me about, called Marco Polo. And Marco Polo is an app where you send your friends little video snippets just to kind of chat with them, but it's not in real time. So you can sort of have these asynchronous conversations. And it's, I thought at the time, I'm like, this is another social networking tool I don't need, but it's actually really fun. Highly recommend it. It's just a fun way to just like check in with your friends, and it's just a different thing to do instead of texting them. And it's silly and gratuitous, and you know, you don't need it, but it's just a nice way to kind of see your friends and see that they're all okay. So yeah, Marco Polo.
Yeah, I love Marco Polo just for, you know, I have certain friends who communicate really well on it. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're not the most frequent texters, or they don't have tons of emotion in their texting. And then on Marco Polo, you really get their personality. And it's a fun way just to see faces, right?
Like, yeah,
we are not seeing enough of other people right now.
Yeah, just to feel connected. And yeah, texting is not enough.
Yep. Texting is not enough, people. That's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck, and Brad Fisher mixed the episode.
If you can, please rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. It really helps other people find the show. You can also reach us by calling us at 347-687-8109 and leaving a voicemail, or write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
What else are you doing? Why aren't you calling us? We're sitting here by the phone waiting for you.
We're waiting for your call, and you are doing nothing else. So get on it.
Yeah. And after you do that, go find us on Twitter @Lifehacker, then go to Instagram @lifehacker.com, and on Facebook @facebook.com/lifehacker. See, you've got a lot of tasks. We're setting you up. You're not going to feel bored.
That's right.
Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter, full of tips and tricks and hacks and lots of news on the coronavirus at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And of course, you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.